Hello, everyone, and welcome to Boston Balling. I'm your host, Gabby Hurlbut. Happy March Madness week. We are here. I'm so excited. I love college basketball and I love March Madness. It's such a fun time of the year. Hope everybody has those brackets ready to go. I know that, you know, I have some upsets in mind this year, so I'm excited to see what happens in the tournament this year. Hopefully my UConn Huskies can make a deep run this year. I have faith. So we will see, but I am excited to bring you another episode of Boston Balling in a time when it's definitely a pretty good and fun time to be a Boston sports fan. I have a great guest with me on the show today. She really does it all. WEEI Bruins writer, Red Sox producer, does college hockey coverage for NESN and ESPN. So you guys probably all know her. Fantastic hockey personality, Bridget Poole. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? You hype me up way too much.
Well, you're definitely very talented at what you do. So
Thank you.
Think we all can appreciate that. So
and speaking of your brackets, there's no way I have no confidence in my March Madness brackets this year. I don't have any confidence.
It's always so tough because there's always those teams that mess up everybody's brackets.
I'm like, when you go with the logical like picks, it just that there's at least like 10 upsets waiting to bite you in the butt. So it's I already immediately regret some of my decisions in my bracket. So I don't remember how far I had UConn going. How far do you have UConn going?
Final four.
Okay, I didn't have them going that far. I think I might have had them going to Elite Eight.
Yeah, it's hard for me being a UConn fan. Because, you know, it's a mix of wanting to be realistic, but also wanting to be optimistic about them.
Did you go to UConn?
No, I did not go to UConn, but I grew up about 10 minutes from the campus, and okay. My grandfather always had season tickets to UConn basketball and football games growing up. So for me, it was definitely, I just kind of grew up and was born into that UConn fandom between my dad and my grandpa. So it runs deep.
Yeah, same thing on my side with Providence. My grandpa went to Providence College, but I do not have them making it out of the first round. So sorry to my grandpa. I don't think they're making a run this year.
Yeah, the Big East is definitely a tough conference. I mean, that UConn Providence game in the Big East tournament was a good one.
Yeah, well, if you're a UConn fan.
It was fun. It was definitely fun for me. But, I mean, that's such a competitive conference now, and there's just some good teams. So it'll be cool to see how the Big East does as a whole this year.
Yeah, I hope that their teams do well, because then it doesn't make you feel as bad about if your team doesn't. Like, if your team lost to them earlier this year, like, PC did just not have their best year. But anyway, that's enough about that.
I like Ed Cooley a lot. I think
I do too.
But
yeah,
it'll be definitely interesting. I mean, Kentucky's a good team, so that'll be a tough matchup.
Yeah, they're not going to win that.
we'll see. But yeah, I'm really excited to have you on my show. I appreciate you hopping on here and joining me. And there's definitely a lot I want to talk about, especially hockey related. I mean, the Bruins are having a great season overall, as we're all experiencing, but I definitely want to hear a little bit about your career path, kind of how you got started in the industry and where you are now.
So I went to UMass Amherst. That's where I started. I didn't know if I was gonna like, I knew I wanted to try it, but I wasn't sure how it was gonna work out, if I was even gonna like it. So I went to UMass Amherst. I was there for 3 years. I started as part of the radio station, started play-by-play for hockey in like 2013 when I first got there, and I've been doing it ever since. So I guess I did enjoy it enough to keep going with it. And I graduated in 2016, took a job in North Carolina at IMG, which is a college sport broadcasting company, came back north because I missed home, and started working with the Red Sox in 2018 at the same company, WEI. I became a Bruins writer during the COVID season. My very first game I covered was actually with an empty arena, which was really weird. So that was my very first introduction to, you know, writing for the Bruins. And when I was like one of 30 people in the game was very strange.
I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, it was. And then when fans came back, it was actually really like that first shock of being like, oh my God, things are kind of going back to normal. It was really kind of illustrated where we were at different points in the pandemic. And like, it was so loud that playoffs when people actually came back, because people were cooped up and just wanted to scream like the whole time. So they all come back. It was so loud. It was great. And then, so this is my third season covering the Bruins. And in the meantime, I've been broadcasting college hockey for Yale and for Hockey East on NESN. So a lot of hockey going on. I actually just had my last broadcast of the year on NESN at UConn. But the men's team lost to UMass Lowell. So sorry for UConn hockey.
It was tough. I had high hopes for UConn hockey this year, but
They lost to UMass Lowell last weekend. And so that was my last college hockey broadcast of the year. It's kind of hard to believe that college hockey season is coming to a close here, unless your team is still left in it. It's actually one of my favorite parts of the season, if you're an NHL fan too, though, because now all these college kids whose teams are out are signing and joining NHL teams. And I'm always interested to see who sticks around in college and who doesn't, and who maybe comes into the NHL in the last, in the last few weeks of March and early April.
Yeah, it's probably cool to see these kids that you cover and see them, get to where they want to be and sign with a team and be like, this is my dream, is to play in the NHL. So it's probably cool for you to kind of see that process happen.
Yeah, it's like the worlds collide. Like, I spend a lot of the season broadcasting college hockey going, oh, this prospect from Detroit, this guy is drafted by the Bruins or whatnot. And then to actually get to see them now this time of year come through. Some of the big names will probably come through soon here. Maybe like Devin Levi to Buffalo. You don't know. Like, sometimes some of the guys in Hockey East that have had really good seasons we might start seeing, because like Boston College is out, Northeastern's out, and they're not making an NCAA tournament. So these guys are coming soon to the NHL.
That's so exciting. Yeah. And obviously, like you said, these kids work so hard at the schools that they're at, and they probably have all these players that are in the NHL currently or that have played in the past that they look up to, that they're like, I want to be that player one day. And so it's just cool, seeing that transition for them and seeing these teams be like, I want you to sign with my team. And that must be such a cool feeling for the kids.
It's funny too, because sometimes when I'm covering the Bruins and I'm on the ninth floor, I see some of the local guys, say from like, Boston College, Northeastern, even UVM, like from the New England teams in Hockey East. Sometimes the guys get to go watch the game of the team they're drafted to. So like, say the Oilers are in town, I see some of the guys upstairs, like just getting to go sit and watch the game and watch the team that they're going to be playing with soon. They're all so excited. It's nice. It's nice to see that stuff. And this is the time of year where some of these guys might actually get a chance, especially for teams that might not necessarily be in the playoff picture. These guys will want to get in there and burn off a year of their contract off the bat. So,
yeah. And that's okay too, because obviously getting their foot in the door and getting that experience, especially like you said, with teams that might not be in the playoff picture that are looking for that young talent right now, the kids can kind of get in and get that experience and kind of work their way up.
Yeah. I wonder if Cutter Gauthier from BC will sign with the Flyers here, because he was their number 5 overall pick last year. And he might want to stay in college for another year. He's only a freshman, but that's kind of a guy that sticks out to me as someone who might just want to get right into playing pros.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. I mean, it seems like it's a good fit for you too, because obviously you're really passionate about the sport. Was hockey growing up always your favorite sport? Like, was that something you knew that you wanted to go into?
Not specifically hockey. I always was into most sports. My favorite sport was actually basketball for the longest time. I was a basketball player in the winter. but I think just in general, I thought maybe this could be a career for me. just because I grew up with sports all the time. Like, and then in high school, when you're trying to figure out what you want to do, my dad was like, well, just pick something that's not going to feel like work, something that's not, you don't get sick of. And I'm like, I talk about the Bruins. This is when I was in high school, that was when the Bruins won the Stanley Cup. So I was like, I talk about the Bruins constantly, all day, every day. I don't get tired of it. So let's go for it. And I did. And then like, you kind of have a surreal moment when you all of a sudden are doing what you thought like maybe was a crazy idea, but then you tried it. Like when I first was at the Garden for my first game covering the Bruins, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm here. Like, and I still, even now, like 3 years into it, I'm just up on the ninth floor sometimes just like, wait a minute, I'm here right now. Like, I'm like, it's happening. What is going on? So like, I'll be talking to like Pasternak or something, and then I'm just in, like, I'll walk away from the conversation like, did I just do that? That's like,
this is really my life right now.
Yeah, it's like I'm at the point where it's like, okay, wow, all right, I'm doing it. That this is great.
Yeah. No, that's super cool. And it's always a rewarding feeling when you're doing something that you love and that you're passionate about, because then it really won't feel like it's work. And I feel like there's so many people who really dream about being in a position like that, where they don't dread going to work every day and they just don't feel like it's a job, but more like just something that they love to do. And I feel like if you love sports and you find a way to be involved with that, it's just probably such a great experience on a daily basis.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been a time that I've driven to the Garden and was like, just didn't want to be there that day. Like, even with all the horrible traffic and drivers,
Boston traffic. Oh my gosh.
And I have a pretty long commute, but there's very rarely, actually, I really can't think of a day that I've gotten there or was thinking about going and just like was like, no, I don't want to go today. Like, it's never like that. It's always, even before the Bruins were as good as they were this year, it's always been something that it just like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. Of course, what else would I be doing?
Yeah, and even with the Red Sox, you said you started covering them in 2018. I mean, talk about a fun season to start covering the Red Sox too, because that was obviously, you know, record-wise the best team they've ever had, and they just won so many games that year. I remember it was so fun watching Red Sox games that season.
That was unexpected too, because I moved back from North Carolina in April, and I think I started covering the Red Sox like towards the beginning of the season, but not exactly at the beginning of the season. So it was kind of like a, oh, okay, like, I guess we're good this year. It was just, it turned out a lot better than I was expecting. That season turned out, I mean, I knew they were going to be good, but just postseason stuff was definitely crazy and a good time to come back to Boston. But what I think we are all, like, as Boston sports fans, kind of used to just like, yeah, you know, we're used to it. Like, winning. Yeah. Sox are good. Patriots are good. Like, Bruins have been close a few times. Bruins almost won in 2019 too. So it's like, it was, but now we're kind of starting to see that might not be in our future, but
I know and I feel like for Boston fans, yeah, it's like, we've just been so used to constant success. Mm-hmm. I feel like especially our generation and kind of being born into just the success of Boston sports. And so people don't know how to handle themselves if the teams aren't really good, because especially the Patriots. I mean, obviously we got so spoiled during the Tom Brady era, and now it's, you know, they're one of those teams that looks like they might have to do a rebuild, and that they're not really familiar with that because they had Brady for so long. And I feel like for Patriots fans, people are like, wait a minute, I don't really understand what this feels like to be in this position where they're just, you know, there's other teams in the division that are just better than them now.
The Cam Newton era was a dark era.
Yeah. I try not to relive that
experience. I just throw that out. And then today it's like, oh, are they going to try to get Aaron Rodgers? Because this morning I was hearing like, oh, what if the Patriots are trying to screw over the Jets and stop Aaron Rodgers from going there? It would be kind of funny, kind of entertaining. Not huge on Aaron Rodgers, but you know what? It'll be better than the Cam Newton experience. So,
yeah, I know. And it's, I feel like for the Patriots, I mean, it's, they seem pretty committed in trying to make it work with Mac Jones. But if they want to do that, they do need to get him real offensive help. Because I feel like he just didn't have enough of that. And so in order for him to succeed, they need a lot more weapons for him than they have.
Well, they've lost weapons since last season. Yep. So they're not in good shape with that either. That's what we're waiting on here, but I'm not super optimistic about their upcoming season. They should have made the playoffs this year too, but they didn't.
Yeah, they won, or they lost some games they should have won.
The very last game with like however many seconds left was just so bad.
Yeah, they found creative ways to lose so many games, and it was really frustrating. And I looked back on the season, and I'm like, there were so many things that could have been prevented, and some of the mistakes that they made during games mm-hmm. that just shouldn't have been made. And I was like, this team was so much more capable than they actually presented.
Yeah. No, it was a very frustrating season for sure. It's much easier covering the Bruins this year. Like, we have a lot of interest in what in our coverage, because especially there was like the drama with the Pastrnak contract. Were they going to be able to sign him? Big trade deadline moves, just how good their goaltending has been, these long stretches of win streaks and different line combinations. And there's just been interest throughout the season in this team, in this Bruins team, that has made it made people seek the coverage more than probably in the past. When you have a team that you think might win the Stanley Cup, the fan base is paying more attention to the injuries and like even stuff that we're covering that's about like some of the other teams in the conference and their trades and where they are. And there's a lot more interest, not that, because Boston has always been a hockey city, but it's, you know, you get some bandwagon people as well when they're doing as good as they are. So we've had a lot of listenership on the station and readers of the content that we've been putting out for the Bruins this year.
Yeah, I know people who have never watched a hockey game before until this season, partway through the season when the Bruins had a really good start, and then they started watching, and now they've been following the team all season because of how good they've been this year. And if that gets some more people into Bruins hockey going forward, then I'm all for it. But it's kind of funny that you see people who have like never really been interested in hockey before that are now turning to the team because they're really good.
Yeah, and maybe those people see a personality they like, and they're like, okay, I like David Pastrnak. He's got, you know, he's got all this style and this personality, and he's going to be around for 8 more years, so I'm going to keep watching him play. That's kind of the ideal situation the Bruins are in right now in terms of marketing. Like, they have some very likable guys. They have some guys like Charlie McAvoy and David Pastrnak that are going to be here for a long time. So it's easy to sell fans on, you know, the team and some guys, some particular players that they might want to follow, you know, for the next 8 or so years.
Yeah, the Pastrnak extension obviously is super exciting. I actually had the conversation with somebody before it happened about, you know, were they going to get it done? When was it going to get done? Was there a lot of urgency from the front office to get it done, and to kind of really having those conversations with him? Cause I didn't really see a whole lot being reported in terms of where they were at with the extension. And I was like, you know, this is obviously something that needs to get done. Like, he's such a good talent to have here. He has so much more left in the tank. Like, he's young, like they need to lock him up. And then when they finally did, I was like, yeah, this seems like an appropriate, you know, way for them to kind of sum up what they really did at the trade deadline to make it feel like the team is more complete. Because if they hadn't gotten that done when they did, I feel like us as fans now would still feel like there's just something that's unresolved that still needs to happen. And, you know, I'm really, really excited about it. I think it's great for the Bruins. I think he's somebody who now knows he's going to be here for a long time. So I think that's going to, you know, continue to show in his play that he's like, this team really wants me here and they value my presence. And I think it's going to, you know, he's going to live up to that contract.
Yeah. I think that contract is going to look like a bargain in like 2 or 3 years. Right. Cause other guys are going to get more money as each year goes on. The cost of players like him goes up and up, and that's going to look like a discount partway through this 8-year deal, as his current contract that he was just on looks like after they signed that a long time ago. So, and I do think that at the deadline, by finishing out the Pasternak contract, which I do think all along was going to happen. I'm not sure what stalled it. I was told that part of the conversation slowing down had to do with wanting the extra $250,000 per year. Okay. And that the original number was 11 a year, and everything turns out 8 for 88, like kind of like the perfect looking contract for number 88. But that some of the delay came from wanting to get that extra $250,000. And if you're the Bruins, it should be a no-brainer. Pay the man an extra $250,000 a year, 11 or 11.25. What's the difference? Like, this is a guy that you need to figure out how to get him, whatever. He could have asked for more. Like, he still would deserve it. But I agree with you that at the trade deadline, you see them making all these moves for rentals, and they're all really great moves, right? Orlov, Hathaway, Bertuzzi. These are all guys that are going to make your team really good this season, add the depth. But then you're still like, okay, well, those are temporary pieces. We kind of want to know, it's not just an all in for this year. It's also we're all in for not ever having a season where the Bruins are going to be well outside the playoff picture. And that kind of just solidifies it, because you have your two goalies locked up for next season. You have Lindholm here for a while, McAvoy here for a while. You obviously have the questions of Bergeron and Krejci, how long they want to play for. They're only here on 1-year contracts. Will they come back next year? Who knows? But you see the pieces that they have in place now with Pasternak as one of those main pieces that you could build around with supplementary players, and you're not going to have to go out next year and get two top centers, and you lose Pasternak, and there's more to build around when you have him there. And there's also that kind of continuation from one generation, like the Charas and the Bergerons, to these middle pieces that played, like McAvoy and Pasternak and Marchand, who played with them and kind of transitioning into this newer core of leaders, which will include Pasternak now for a long time, and McAvoy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the Bergeron and Krejci situation, I honestly wasn't even sure if they were going to come back this year. I was leaning towards them not coming back this year, actually.
I think that they really weren't decided until the summer, like until partway through the offseason, they realized they weren't ready to step away. And I think it's funny with Krejci in particular that he's having a great time this year, by the way. Like, he's kind of got an interesting personality. He's kind of sarcastic. He's funny. But he comes across as serious, even though I think it's mostly sarcastic. Like, he just kind of got like the dry sense of humor. He is having a lot of fun this year. And I think that coming back for him was more about just like hanging out with his bros, like just hanging out with Pasternak, and all of them making the decision together, I think was important, because they didn't want to come back without each other. So they all had a conversation with each other, I believe something to do with Tuukka's wedding. Tuukka had his wedding in Italy, and they all went and had a great time.
That's awesome.
And then they were like, yeah, we're getting the band back together. So
that's great.
They did. And I wonder if they win this year, they'll have had so much fun this year that they're like, why can't we do it again? Like, we're 1 year older, but we still feel like, I don't know what you think, but I don't think Bergeron and Krejci look like they're, on such a decline that next year they wouldn't be able to adequately be top centers.
Yeah, they're definitely not washed by any means. They're still contributing, very much contributing. And I think they have enough left in the tank where if they wanted to play again after this year, they could. But I also could see, if they do win this year, them also being like, we just won the cup. Like, that was our goal, and hanging it up at that point. I do think one is dependent on the other. too. I think if one decides to step away, I think the other one does too. Because
I think it all is dependent too. I think Pastrnak, if Pastrnak hadn't signed, and if in the offseason he's not sure where he's going, then why would they want to cut? Like, all of those pieces need to kind of agree in order for it to seem like it's worth it to try to run it back if they win or if they don't. Like, is it worth running it back? Well, we need the right guys here at the same time. And as of right now, I think it's set up that they might be tempted to come back next season. I think it's going to be another off season that's the same as this past one, though, where we're sitting around and all of a sudden August rolls around and we're like, well, they still haven't made a decision and nobody's retired, but no one is signed. And yeah, so it'll, and I'm sure they probably won't have made up their mind until partway through the summer, whether they win or whether they lose. So it is kind of interesting because you hear people wanting to go out on top, but I also think, like, if you think your team's still good enough, you gotta give it another try. Like, you gotta try to even extend that legacy, and they enjoy it, clearly. So,
yeah, and I mean, obviously, this year's team is well set up to go all the way. I mean, obviously, there's the playoffs is such a different animal. Like, it's just basically a different game than the regular season, which is what makes hockey playoffs so fun, because any team could just get hot at any time. And, you know, it's just so fun in the postseason because everything from the regular season at that point just really doesn't matter anymore. And it's, you know, it's just such a different game to me, which is why I love the postseason. But, you know, in terms of the trade deadline, we knew that, you know, they had to get a few pieces, more depth pieces, because they definitely have the core already. And I also was saying, you know, I hope they don't make moves that require them to give up too many impactful pieces that are helping them significantly on this historic run that they've been on this season. So when they do make moves, they need to try to, you know, get guys that can help fill needs without giving up huge impact players. And I think they did a really good job of that because they didn't really have to, you know, give up any of these key pieces to get the guys that they got, and the guys that they got are already majorly impacting the team in their time here.
Yeah, there was conversations. They basically, everyone kind of knew they need to add a defenseman. Did they need to add a defenseman as good as Orlov? No. Did we even think that's what was going to happen? Not really. A lot of conversation had either been about Chychrun, who is, you know, a top four defenseman, even probably top pair defenseman for a lot of teams, but that the cost was going to be giving up people off your active roster, and that wasn't on the table this year for the team, because they liked everyone on the roster was probably going to stick around. Maybe they would have thought about moving Grizzlick, or I'd even heard Carlo at times, but I don't think they wanted to do that. So Chychrun becomes not an option at that point. You know, maybe add a depth defenseman. Well, they went out and they added a top four defenseman in Orlov, and they didn't have to give up any of their current defensemen, which was really a deal breaker, I think, for them, when you already have such a strong decor and the point is to add depth. You're not trying to get rid of a Clifton or a Grizzlick or a Carlo, even if it was for a Chychrun who you might be able to keep around. So anyway, that's a huge move. And not only do they get Orlov, they get Hathaway, two guys that Bruins fans probably don't like before they show up in Boston, because they're tough to play against. They're those guys that you'd want to have on your team rather than be playing against. Two really smart moves. Hathaway looks good on the fourth line so far. And with that move, they also added that extra fourth line depth. So you see the injuries happen right after that move with Washington. You see Foligno go out and Taylor Hall go out. So immediately you're like, okay, this is exactly why it's important to add. Even if you have the perfect roster, you need to add something, because injuries are bound to happen either before the playoffs or during the playoffs. You never know. It's kind of a contingency plan. So then, because of the timing of Hall's injury, they're able to go out and get Tyler Bertuzzi from Detroit. And I mean, I guess the silver lining on the Hall injury is when it happened, because now you know you can add a guy that's not just a fourth line guy. Like, they add Bertuzzi, who can play on the second or third line. They even have been playing him on the first line just to try him out at times. So they're able to make their team a lot better, somehow fit it in under the cap, which once again goes back to the fact that Bergeron and Krejci wanted to take such minimum contracts to come back and play, such team-friendly deals. So, like, all of the cap gymnastics that had to go on to get these three players onto the Bruins was a huge accomplishment for Don Sweeney. He's had a great year besides the Mitchell Miller thing. So, like, everything else he's done has been
dark day.
Perfect. But so they did exactly what they needed to do. And you see some of the other big swings that teams in the Eastern Conference took at the trade deadline. You see Toronto going out and adding a bunch of pieces, including O'Reilly. And then you question now, the conversation I was having with my coworkers today was, now with Svechnikov out in Carolina, out for the season, you're looking at a Carolina team that should have been swinging the way the Bruins were, the way that Toronto was, the way that, you know, the other top contenders in the Eastern Conference were, because now you're missing one of your best forwards and your forward depth wasn't where it needed to be in the first place. So the importance of having a good trade deadline, we're starting to see it already.
Yeah, it's so true. And I feel like Carolina is one of those teams that, you know, heading into this season, they were a team that I was keeping an eye on as, you know, would be a threat most likely. And it's like, if you don't have the depth to replace some of these players that do get injured, then you're just not going to go anywhere in the postseason. And I think the Bruins did a really good job of, you know, compensating for the players that are out. And, you know, Don Sweeney deserves a big round of applause for what he's done with this team this season. And I think even, you know, from a coaching standpoint, I was excited to have Montgomery here, but obviously nobody knew that they were going to have as good of a season as they're having so far. And I do credit him for some of that too, because obviously coaching is super important. And, you know, I think obviously everybody liked Bruce Cassidy for the most part, from a fan standpoint, in terms of, you know, his success in Boston and what he was doing with this team. But I know from a player standpoint, the players, I don't think were as on good terms with him at that point. And so I think a change was probably needed. And we're seeing how evident that is now, that, you know, even though somebody's been there for a while, sometimes just getting a fresh face in there is beneficial. And I feel really good about where the Bruins are at with that too.
Yeah, I think the word that we used the most when Cassidy got fired was scapegoat, because it kind of looked like he was the one that was taking the blame for a rough series against Carolina that didn't go the way that, you know, it probably should have gone. And he was doing as much as he could at the time, it seemed, to work with the pieces that he had. And Montgomery has done a really good job. I like talking to him. He's a nice guy, very different personality than Bruce Cassidy. I think his approach is different in that he kind of just leaves them be for the most part. Like, he knows he has Bergeron and he knows he has Foligno and he knows he has these other voices. And I've even heard him say that, like, sometimes he's behind the bench and he'll start saying something and then Bergeron will tell him, like, no, don't worry about it. And then, like, so there's a lot of, like, him helping with the practice stuff, the technical stuff, implementing systems. But he has such an experienced veteran team that a lot of the, like, there's no need to throw them under the bus. Like, Cassidy had at times in post-game press conferences, called guys out, and Montgomery has a different approach. Obviously there hasn't been a lot to call out this year. So we haven't seen that. I guess when everything's going well, there's no need to be a bad cop at any point in time. And, you know, it all works out fine for you. Do I think the team would be doing well with Cassidy here still? Yes.
Yeah.
But it's impossible to argue that they wouldn't be doing, like, that they could be doing better than this, because there's not really any way they could be doing better.
What really is better than this?
It's not possible. Like, you'd have to have a perfect season pretty much, but it's interesting to see the dynamics this year. It's a happier, locker room. It really is. And the one guy you think of most is Jake DeBrusque. And obvious difference with him in particular. And I think leadership is happy with the way they're able to get their opinion across, and that they have the space to kind of control the narrative of the team, even in the intermissions, even on the bench. It seems to be more of a player-led room. So it's definitely a different dynamic.
Yeah, that's good. And with the DeBrusque thing, obviously it's, you know, he goes from asking for a trade last year to where he's at now, and he's having a really good season this year. And you can just even see it in his face that he genuinely seems happier here now.
He is. And I think he's one of those misunderstood players, right? There are people that come up and ask me, that know that I cover the team, they'll be like, oh, you know, what do you think of Jake DeBrusque? And a lot of the times their opinions of him are negative because of the, request to be traded. And people kind of have gotten this idea that he maybe is kind of like whiny or like, you know, soft and couldn't handle certain things. Or I actually don't have that impression of him at all. I think that maybe even the opposite of that he worked so hard to get through some of the, the mental block that he was having. I have a lot of respect for how he's been able to pull himself out of that situation where it was clear that he was having some, you know, doubts about his game. And people dealt with the pandemic differently, right? Like, not everybody had a psychological experience that was similar during the pandemic. Some people didn't handle isolation as well as others. He wasn't in his home country. He wasn't like, he doesn't have a wife and kids. Like, I think that a lot of people were quick to judge him. And I mean, I've had coaches that I didn't get along with, and I, you know, would get bummed and think that I wasn't getting the right opportunities. So I actually really do think of him as somebody that stuck it out, because remember, he asked for a trade request, and then instead of getting traded at the trade deadline, he signed an extension. He signed a 2-year extension, decided to stay, and his attitude has turned around, and it takes a lot for someone to do that. And I think that, you know, the support he had around him from his teammates was good, but I really think he's a mentally tough player rather than what people might have been thinking about him when the whole leak came out about the trade request.
Yeah, he definitely on Twitter during that time last year was getting a lot of heat, and people were saying some not nice things about him. And at the end of the day, it's also, you know, we have to remember that they're people too. They're people first, really, before they're athletes. And, you know, for him, we as fans don't know the whole situation of what was really going on there behind the scenes with him. And I think people just automatically were quick to jump to, you know, he hates it here, so he wants to leave. Like, why would he hate it here? And there was a lot of just negativity going on surrounding him. And you feel bad.
He was getting booed. Yeah. He was getting booed. And I, like I said, I still have people come up to me because they don't like, when you say they're people first, it's easy to see up close. Like when I'm talking to him and when you see him interacting with some of the other guys in the locker room, like in person and face to face talking to him, you get a completely different sense of what kind of a person he is. And that he's not like a, I feel bad for myself kind of player. He's not, you know, making excuses kind of person. I think actually the opposite. He found a way to fix the problems and has found a way to enjoy playing again in Boston. So I give him a lot of credit, and he's one of those misunderstood guys.
Yeah, Boston's a tough place to play, as we know. That really goes for any sport. It's just, it's, you know, it's a tough fan base, but it's also a super passionate fan base. So obviously, if you're playing here and you're playing well, the fans are going to absolutely adore you. And I think people just are seeing how well he's been playing this year, and the fact that people are now reassured that he wants to be here, I think has changed, really started to change people's mentality when it comes to him. But I'm really happy for him. I think, you know, he's finally feeling like he's finding his place on this team, which is huge. And I think it would be obviously, if they win this year, he'd just be reassured that he got to be part of something really special this year.
Yeah, I think he had a full circle moment at the Winter Classic as well, kind of getting to be the hero on national TV at the Winter Classic with his two goals and playing with a broken leg, like scoring one of them with a broken leg. Like that was kind of his full circle moment where you could really feel the fan base embracing him, whereas they hadn't been fully. I think that now we see that full circle trust in him again from the fan base. And clearly someone who plays through that kind of an injury is somebody that Boston fans would want to cheer for. They like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely shows the toughness. I was like, how is he even playing in this game right now?
Yeah, he didn't even know it. Well, he said he didn't even really have a clue how bad like the extent was until after. I didn't notice when he walked into the press conference that he was wearing a boot that day because he was on the opposite side as I was. So I didn't notice that when he came in after the game, he had a boot on his leg. Yeah, obviously we know the story of that and he's back, but that was, you know, a fairly long, somewhat concerning injury to have.
Good for him. It's definitely, it just shows, like you were saying, the overall vibes of the team. And it seems like there is a lot of positivity going on this season. And that gives me a lot of hope. I mean, and then the other big thing that's made a huge difference this year, you touched on it briefly, is the goaltending, because obviously it's so important to have solid, reliable goaltending when you're going into the postseason. And just, you know, looking at Ullmark and the season he's had is phenomenal. I mean, him scoring the goal in that game is just an unforgettable moment, but also just in general, just what he's been doing for this team this year is just so good. And even with Swayman, I mean, there's people who have given Swayman some crap this year, but I think it's really unwarranted because obviously he hasn't been having as good of a season as Ullmark, but that's really hard to do just because Ullmark is having such a phenomenal season. But if you have Swayman as your other goaltender behind Ullmark, that is nowhere even close to a problem for me, because I do see a lot of, you know, potential with Swayman, and he's still young and he's still developing. And I think he could be a really, really solid piece to the puzzle in the future for this team too. So I think just having the goaltender depth that they have is a really, really good thing.
Yeah, and this is more of a talk radio thing, when, you know, talking heads were like, oh, you know, what if they trade Swayman to add something at the trade deadline? How crazy. The Bruins have been in an ideal goalie situation the entire year. And of all the positions that you want to know that you have a guy that can come in and do just as good a job, it's goalie. Like you have a defenseman, you want to be able to bring in the next guy off the bench. Nothing is more important than having that goalie that can come in if your number one goalie gets hurt. And they couldn't have a more perfect situation in net, because these two guys push each other. They genuinely, the relationship you see between them is real.
The goalie hugs,
like they are genuinely just obsessed with each other, best friends. And they're two guys that are both having statistical career seasons, and it's unprecedented, really. The history that the team has made coming alongside the history that Ullmark and Swayman have been making. Ullmark is probably still the favorite to win the Vezina.
Well deserved.
Well, yeah, and he just above and beyond what you see from the other guys in the league, which is kind of funny because when he was in Buffalo, he kind of got hung out to dry and people didn't realize the potential he had. And this is another Don Sweeney move where you go out and you make a few of your signings in the offseason last year. You bring in some free agents. You brought in Eric Halla, Derek Forbert, Nick Foligno, and Linus Ullmark. And I know there's a fifth one I'm forgetting. But Ullmark turns out to be probably the biggest move you make out of all of it. And this is a guy that was relatively off people's radar. And it turned out to be the perfect move. And at the time too, remember, Tuukka was still in the picture. Yeah. Tuukka was trying to make his comeback and did play a few games last season. Obviously,
it is sad the way that he had to go out, but
yes, and I see him. He's still around all the time. He's still, I see him up on the ninth floor all the time. And sometimes after the game, like in the locker room areas, he'll be down there, but he's still hanging out. He still lives in the Boston area. I was told that sometimes if you go out like in Boston or Newton, he like has been playing drums for like live music. Like he
really?
Just like, yeah. So this is his new thing. Like if there's a bar with live music, you might see Tuukka playing the drums somehow down there. But wow. Yeah.
I didn't see that.
It's kind of been the perfect season for the perfect goalie duo. And I think it helps that they're not threatened by each other and that they do have that genuine like friendship relationship. And I will say Jeremy Swayman is one of the nicest, most genuine people that you'll talk to. Like he is just, for a goalie, very calm personality. I don't know. He's great. He's one of the guys that you just know is a good person.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, because it's always obviously being a fan and watching games, you don't get to see the personality as much behind the players. And I mean, you can kind of get a sense of them when they do press conferences and everything, but it's not the same because you're watching it and you're seeing what they're saying. But for somebody like you, who's around the players a lot and gets to talk to them one-on-one frequently, just really getting to learn more about them, you know, outside of the sport is probably something super cool too, because those personalities that we all see, you get to really see who they are, you know, behind the uniform.
Yeah, it's true. Especially the guys that are kind of like quietly funny, that people don't really see like the like sense of humor that some of the guys have. Like Connor Clifton is very well liked in the locker room and has this very sneaky, funny sense of humor that people like. And then some of the other guys are probably pretty much exactly what you'd expect. Like Brad Marchand is probably exactly what you'd expect. Patrice Bergeron, probably exactly what you'd expect. Taylor Hall is maybe one of the most intelligent people that you'll talk to. Like one of the most intelligent athletes that you'll talk to. He gives the best answers to everything. If there's ever like an opportunity to go talk to him, that's where you should go, because he gives really thoughtful answers and has a really high awareness, like social awareness and hockey IQ. That's something people probably don't know, because he's actually a really quiet guy that has a lot of intelligence for sure and maturity.
Wow. See, that's so cool to know. That's something that I would never just know or be able to pick up on, you know? So you get to experience those little things about the players too, and it probably just makes the whole experience that much, you know, more interesting for you when you're watching a game too, because you get such a different perspective than, you know, the fans would.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the dynamics play out with like Charlie Coyle and Trent Frederick, where I always feel like Charlie Coyle is kind of like the big brother.
Oh,
Trent Frederick, so and he's like, they're always like kind of together, like throwing a football around or whatever. Like sometimes you just see those little dynamics of like friendships that are going on and whatnot. But yeah, it is interesting to be that close and see what they're actually like. I think it does help you analyze people's play as well, because when you know how people think the game, like you kind of know what they're going to be mad out about themselves, or what they're going to be critical, or what they're trying to do. So it does help for sure.
Yeah. And then from a personality standpoint, how do you feel like, you know, the new players adjust to the locker room? Like when they acquire players at the trade deadline, like the trio that they got at this trade deadline, obviously everybody else in the locker room has that bond and that connection and is so used to being with each other. So how do the new players kind of adapt to that usually?
I think that, so I haven't been able to talk to Bertuzzi yet, but when I talked to Garnet Hathaway, who has, him and Bertuzzi both have had a history with Marchand in a negative way, they kind of just joke about it and they're just like, yeah, it's like, it's in the past, like that kind of thing's in the past. everyone that's joined this team at this deadline is excited to be a part of a team that they know, like, they know what the deal is. They know what the end goal is. They know that they have to be accountable to the veteran players. They know they have to be accountable to the fan base. I think they're just the expectations. They're ready to meet those expectations, and everybody that and the guys that were on the team before have been very inviting to the guys coming in, because they know at the end of the day, it gives them a better chance to win the Stanley Cup. So it's a mutual, you know, feeling of getting better, having tougher guys, getting to play with some of these guys rather than against for a change is something that they're all happy about. So I think they just also give a nod to management that they were willing to go do what they did as well.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, because for those guys coming to a team like the Bruins with the season they're having this year, how could that not be exciting for them? You know, they're like, I get a genuine chance to win the cup this year. So for them, it must be just a super exciting moment for them to be able to be a part of, you know, what it has been a historic team so far.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because I think all three of those guys didn't necessarily even realize their teams were sellers. Because the Capitals weren't far out of the playoff.
I was kind of surprised by that, to be honest.
So I think that it wasn't even really on their radar too much that they might be getting moved. But really, what an ideal situation to come into. If you're going to get traded, let it be to Boston. And Garnet Hathaway is from Maine. And went to school at Brown. So he's probably fairly comfortable coming into this area. Not sure what the other two's experiences with Boston. But I know that for the first week, they were kind of still like trying to, because they joined the Bruins on the road trip. So yeah. Then they got back to Boston, and then they're like, okay, well, where am I moving my family? Like, where am I going to get an apartment? And then it was kind of more the logistical stuff. And that's when you kind of start to see the other players really helping them and being like, okay, this is where you should eat. This is where, like, look into apartments over here, and like actually helping them out, like, as humans to try to get themselves settled.
Yeah, for sure. It's yeah, because sometimes people don't always think about that when somebody gets traded to another team. It's like they're uprooting their whole family and their whole, you know, situation just to another place. It's like anybody else moving to a different area. There's you know, there's a period of having to get acclimated to where you're going to. That's just anybody. And so I feel like sometimes with athletes, people forget to think about that aspect of it, that, yeah, you know, they have to get used to where they're going.
And Boston's not an easy city to get around.
No, it's not.
And it's not a cheap city. It's I can't imagine them trying to figure it out. Like, it must be overwhelming at first. So at least they've kind of got that behind them, but they also, I still think, haven't found their full, maybe Orlov. Orlov came in, was good right away. Production-wise, did more in 4 games than he did in a whole year, the whole beginning part of the year, like 40-something games with Washington. I do think Bertuzzi is still trying to build chemistry, and that his ceiling with the Bruins is much higher than what we've seen. In that game against Chicago, he should have had a goal. He hit both posts and stayed out.
Yeah, I was so angry at that. A lot of stuff about that game last night was frustrating, but that was definitely up there.
Yeah, because that's like, because you almost feel like, first of all, it was going to be a power play goal as well. You almost feel like as soon as they need that one power play goal to get the ball rolling, and he needs that one goal to kind of get the confidence, like, okay, like, I can be a shoot first guy, like, on this line, and just get a little bit of confidence in how he should play with the Bruins. So it's like, it would have been so good to get that little, like, just get the ball rolling for him a little bit. He did end up getting an assist on Frederick's goal, and I thought that third line was really good in Chicago, and that they've been playing well. I think Frederick has shown a lot of improvement this season. And unfortunately for him, when Hall comes back, I'm not sure he's in the lineup. Because they're going to throw Hall back on that third line. And I wonder what happens with Frederick, because I don't think they take Nosek out as fourth line center, because I think they just like how he plays defensively and on the penalty kill. And so you're kind of looking at Greer and Frederick as the most likely people to be out of the lineup when Foligno and Hall come back.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I've been so impressed with Frederick this year. He's he's been a huge part of this team. And I feel like it's, you've just seen a difference from last year to this year with him. And I think it's going to be unfortunate for him if he loses that playing time, because, you know, he really has been a big part of this team. So I'm really impressed with him, but I love Taylor Hall too. So I'm excited for him to come back. I think when it comes to making a playoff run, they're going to need Taylor Hall. So, you know, I think that makes sense, but yeah, I think there's a lot of good things going on with this team. If there's any teams that you are concerned about heading into the playoffs or like worried for the Bruins to face, are there any teams in particular that you would say fall into that category?
Well, I absolutely would have put Carolina at the top of the list.
Me too.
But the Svechnikov injury does change things. I still think they have a really good defense. I still think, I mean, they still have Aho and Teravainen, and they have a strong team. But the question becomes, did they do enough at the deadline? Is Svechnikov's injury too much for them to overcome in terms of offensive production? And he's also a guy that can kind of get under players' skin. That is important in the playoffs, a bigger forward. I still think, I guess I would have in the past put them at the biggest concern. I think maybe they're probably below Toronto now in terms of concern. But the good news for the Bruins is that you don't have to play unless there's some sort of catastrophic ending failure where they end up not in the number one spot. What you're looking at is not having to play Toronto or Tampa Bay until at least the second round. So you're looking at a playoff matchup against the Islanders or the Penguins, which are two teams that aren't a huge matchup concern compared to Carolina or Toronto. You hope that either Toronto or Tampa Bay comes out of that series maybe banged up or worn down, and that you get them, you know, a little bit into kind of their attrition and whatever they're facing in the playoffs. Now, eventually, if you have to play one of those two teams, it's playoff hockey, and Toronto has that chip on their shoulder that they haven't been able to get out of the first round, and Tampa Bay's going into it with the same belief that they can win another cup the way that they've been able to dominate that conference for a while now. So I would put Toronto at the top at this point because of the moves they've made and the skill they have and the way they played the Bruins this year. But at the same time, I still like the Bruins over them, and you don't have to see them, you know, like I said, unless there's some sort of horrible downfall that we don't see coming. You know, you don't have to play them in the first round. So you're looking at a different matchup that the fact that you don't have to go through two of those teams is, you know, you don't have to go through both Toronto and Tampa Bay is huge.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Toronto's tough, and, you know, they've played the Bruins tough this year. Carolina, I'm still not ruling them out as a threat because I think they have the capability to still be a really tough team in the postseason. But like you said, it's all going to come down to, you know, are they going to be able to have the depth to be able to compete with the Bruins at this point since they won't be fully healthy? So I think, you know, they're still a team that is popping up in my head as a team that I wouldn't necessarily be, I don't want to say not confident, because I think the Bruins are still overall a better team than them, but a team that still could, you know, put up a tough fight against the Bruins.
Yeah. But you, so as of right now, you wouldn't be seeing them until the Eastern Conference final.
Yeah.
The way that things are set out right now. So they would have to make it through all, you know, all of this, these other rounds before they get to play you. So it'll be interesting. I don't doubt that they could make the Eastern Conference final. Rod Brindamore is a great coach.
Oh yeah.
And just because you lose, but like you compare it, like, would you want to have a Bruins team that had David Pastrnak on it? Or like, do you like your chances without David Pastrnak on your team come playoffs times? Like that's kind of the comparison to Svechnikov. Like you're missing a guy that can be clutch in the playoffs. So it's kind of, it just makes it uncertain for them. It's not necessarily that they can't do it without him, because, I mean, just look at the Bruins to start the season. They went a few months without McAvoy, Marchand, and Grzelcyk, and they did fine. So,
it's kind of crazy to think about them. Mm-hmm. It was like as if they weren't even out. They just like didn't even like miss a beat without them.
Yeah, the original like beginning of the year coverage was like, can they tread water in a playoff position until these guys come back? And then it was like, they've been in freaking first place since the year started. So
that was the conversation that I was having before the season started too, was how, you know, I'm hoping that they can kind of tread somewhere in the middle where they still would be in playoff contention, like until those guys come back. Cause that's what the expectation was for me.
Yeah.
I definitely did not think that they would do what they are doing.
No, they've way exceeded expectations, I think. And we haven't even talked – Melvin, stop it. We haven't even talked about Pavel Zacha, who came in the offseason and got himself an extension by playing well, and how he can be part of the team going forward, possibly a replacement for Krejci on the second line as a center. So there's just so many storylines that have been – positive. It's hard to pick out a negative besides the Mitchell Miller thing, but that's not a guy that ended up on the team. It was just like a, why are we doing this right now kind of thing. So
it was a bad look.
Yeah, for sure. And they still have that contract, so they haven't been able to get out of it, but yeah, lots of different storylines throughout the season. The Bruins are hoping that health doesn't become a negative storyline for them.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. But
I think all teams right now are waiting for like the shoe to drop. Like there's been even Stamkos and Matthews in the last few weeks have had minor injuries where people are thinking, oh, is this going to be something serious? Is this going to affect the whole playoffs? But then it's always turned out to just be minor. So even O'Reilly had his hand injury. So yeah, just kind of like find myself every night flipping through and like going through Twitter, like, anybody get hurt? Like, that's kind of almost the story of the season or where we're at right now. Like playoff watching or watching the other teams around the Eastern Conference, because they're so good that a big injury might be, you know, able to shake up what things look like right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why it's always so, you know, it's always so tough when it gets to this part of the season, because a team could look really, really good heading into the playoffs, but an injury could really change everything. And it's unfortunate, but it just, you know, it does happen. And we just have to hope for the best there and hope that they can be a healthy team going into the postseason. Cause I really, really like the Bruins' chances if they're healthy.
Yeah. And because of that, I think maybe we do start to see load management. We're still a month out. I think the last game of the season is April 13th in Montreal. But, I mean, what is there, about 15 games left? I'd have to double check. In that time, I think we're going to see less and less of some of the older guys, Bergeron and Krejci. That is if Bergeron lets them take him out, which I still question whether or not he'll let them do that. And I'd even like to see Lindholm come out, McAvoy, rotating guys out. That's what we're in for over the next few weeks. I hope, though, they don't look the way they looked in Chicago, where it was like, okay, we already clinched a playoff spot, we're just going to coast, like, and, you know, play without good habits and let that, like, kind of, like, playing down to opponents become a thing, because then you're knocking yourself off what has been a season of entirely being like no slump at all to maybe slumping at the wrong time. And really don't want that to happen, especially when you're trying to get some guys rest. You want to know they'll be able to get the guys in the lineup that aren't going to just kind of walk through the game and hope that your goalie is so good that he'll set. Because Ullmark, a lot of times, even if the Bruins have sucked, has just been able to stop everything. So it's like, can we not just only rely on Ullmark to be the best goalie in the world? Sometimes is what it seems like.
No, it's so true. Like carrying the team on his shoulders. And it's like, yeah, that's a tough place to put a goalie in.
Yeah.
But it's certainly going to be a fun couple months here. And I'm definitely looking forward to kind of, you know, wrapping up the season and heading into the postseason, because obviously this team looks better than they have in a long time. So I'm really excited to see how that plays out for them.
Yeah, me too. Hoping that get to cover the team into June. So
yeah, right. Honestly, hopefully, fingers crossed on that, that we'll be talking in June, and it'll be even more exciting news than even right now.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I get to touch the Stanley Cup for the first time, and they bring, because when it, if it comes to Boston, you know, they bring it around to the games and different media events, and that's top of the bucket list. Got to touch the Stanley Cup.
That's super cool. If that happens, then I hope to see a picture on your social media.
Life made.
Well, Bridget, this was a lot of fun. I really, really appreciate you hopping on here with me.
Yeah, thanks, Gabby.
Thanks so much. And everybody, thanks for tuning in, as always, to the show. I hope you enjoy all the college basketball games this weekend. As always, go Bruins. Hopefully we get, like we said, an exciting rest of the season, fingers crossed, into June. Hope everyone has a great rest of the week as well, and I will catch you all next time. Take care, everyone.